Hello and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast with me, Michelle Ribeiro. In this podcast, we chat to senior information and cybersecurity executives from a range of industries about their passions, experiences, and challenges. Without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Welcome everyone to our Business of InfoSec podcast. This week, we are talking about women in security, and this topic is actually very close to my heart. Joining me is Jo Stewart-Rotary, who is an amazing woman that has inspired me from the day I met her. We actually met online in the middle of the pandemic. I work in the events industry for 15 years, as the majority of you know by now. And when COVID hit, like many of us, I lost my job. At the time, Corinne was looking for an events producer to start organizing cybersecurity virtual events, and I was offered the role. None of my friends and family believed when I told them that I found a job in the events industry during lockdowns in Australia, which was one of the hardest in the world. So then I approached Jo, who was not only the first woman to agree to speak to me about cybersecurity events, but also one who supported my work throughout the past couple of years. So, Jo, I have to be very honest with you. It's an absolute pleasure. It's an honor to have you here with us today. Thanks for agreeing to join us.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's always been great working with you on events and leading up to them as well. So I'm very pleased to be talking to you today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us and thanks for agreeing to be interviewed. I'm really excited for our conversation today. So I think we can start with a bit of an introduction. Could you please tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, how you ended up in a cybersecurity and, you know, a security role?
That's always an interesting question. I started off in infrastructure. You know, I was one of those people crawling around the floor on data centers to find out where the issue was and all that sort of stuff. And I then climbed the ranks and became a CIO in the electricity space. So which was kind of, in the utilities world, was quite interesting. I was one of the first CIOs in Australia to be responsible for both real-time systems, so operational control systems and SCADA systems, those systems that kept the lights on, and business IT as well. We were involved in setting up a pilot program for a security operations centre for the national grid. And that was where my love of security first began. And after doing that, I got a tap on the shoulder from a consulting firm and asked me whether I would like to go into consulting in specializing in security. And I thought about it. I thought, well, you know, this is an opportunity I really can't say no to. So I did that. I moved across, and some people say I went to the dark side. I think I walked into the light. So from there, I started to do virtual CISO roles for organisations that were perhaps not quite ready to have a permanent CISO or a bit smaller. And now I have a couple of hats. I run the security and technology assurance practice for BRM Advisory in South Australia. I also seconded myself out onto roles. So I've been seconded out 4 days a week to Silverchain Group as their Chief Information Security Officer for about 3 years now. So that's been really exciting. You know, working in the in-home healthcare not-for-profit world has been quite different from high-end tourism or the electricity businesses. So that's where I am today.
That's very interesting. I didn't know you started in the infrastructure role and then moved on to a role as a CIO. That's very interesting. So what are some of the roles you've held in the past that you are most proud of?
Look, I think the CIO role that I first had in electricity was a big deal for me. It was one of those kind of, oh, really me sort of feelings. And I loved it. And I really felt stretched because I had literally two separate parts of the organisation reporting to me. So I had in the near and real-time operational control world, I had electrical engineers reporting to me. And on the other side, I had traditional IT folks reporting to me. So that was kind of a really interesting world. And to make that work well was a challenge for a new C-suiter, but I really enjoyed it. And that's one that I'm really proud of. You know, I'd actually say I'm proud of all the roles that I've had over the years, but that one was a really particularly interesting one for me. You know, yeah. And then, of course, moving into security, CISO roles are phenomenal because you have to really create opportunities across the business because you have to make sure that you have that cross collaboration. So to get a security first approach, you really need to go across the organization, not up and down. So it's not just colleagues in technology that you have to be friendly with, but you also, there's privacy, legal, facilities, and risk and assurance. So you really have to work across the organization. And I find that really challenging at times. Because we don't all speak the same language. Sometimes, you know, we're speaking for and on behalf of a different part of the business. So it's also a great learning experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can imagine it's a very complex role. As you said, you have to, you know, work across different departments in the organization. So it must be very challenging. So yeah, I'm sure you must be very proud of what you have achieved. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So before we start our conversation on the topic that we are talking today, women in security, I just wanted to ask you a little bit on a personal note. If you are not at your desk, at your work desk, what are you doing? Where are you?
Well, I have a couple of little side hustles. I have a business where I create beads and necklaces and earrings and bracelets from largely recycled and upcycled materials. I also, in that same business, I also produce silk, dyed silk. So I use a Japanese dyeing technique, and I do sarongs, wraps and scarves. So that's a great deal of fun for me to do that. And it's turned out to be, you know, it's a hobby that pays for itself, shall we say. Then I have another little hobby that pays for itself called Fleet Fine Foods. And Fleet Fine Foods is I produce jams, jellies, mustards, pickles, chutneys and spice mixes and sell those in our local cellar doors because I live in the wine region, in a wine region. So that's also a bit of fun as well. So they're the sorts of things I do when I'm not at my desk.
That's very nice. Just have a little bit of the artistic skills, which is very, very nice. And I'm sure it's also very good for you when you are not working to just let your mind let go of work and just disconnect your mind a little bit.
I think that's actually really important for everybody in leadership to have that time to themselves to do something different. Because one of the problems that we face as leaders, I think, is that oftentimes leaders will go straight from doing that day job stuff into home life, which is often about, you know, parenting. And parenting to me is another form of leadership. So there's actually no breathing space. So that's something that I certainly allow myself to have, is that breathing space.
Yeah, for sure. And apart from your artistic skills, what is your favorite hobby?
Cooking. Love cooking. Both my husband and I cook. So it's nothing for us to be in the kitchen, and we tend to bicker when we're cooking together in the kitchen, but it's still fun and we end up with a lovely meal at the end of the day. So, yeah, that's probably the other thing that I do. And if you're going to ask me what my favourite sorts of foods are, probably I love that fusion food from the southwest of the United States, which is Mexican, Native American, a little bit of traditional ranch style food. So really quite spicy. Black beans, corn, you know, so some delicious flavors.
Amazing. That's amazing. And it's also a great way to create bond with your family and spend a good time with your partner. Yeah. So let's move on to what we came to talk about here today, which is women in security. I'd like to start by asking you if you could share a little bit of your experiences with advancing women in security and cybersecurity fields.
Look, I remember the very first event that I went to as a woman in security. There were about 450 delegates. It was in Melbourne, and there was me and two other women in the room. So that was kind of an eye-opener to me. It had never occurred to me that there were going to be less women in security than there were in technology. So that was kind of an eye-opener, and it sort of certainly made me realise that we needed to look to get more women into the security space. So that's where I guess my I began that thought process of how can we do that? And so I've become over the years a bit of an advocate for women in the technology workforces, but certainly in security in particular. So, yeah, that was my first experience of it. And I think that, you know, if I look at some of the big international conferences that I've spoken at now, I would say that we're still only looking at no more than 10, 15, tops 20% women attendees. So we really need to lift our game on that and have stuff that's more attractive to women. And I don't mean necessarily content. I mean, you know, is there a possibility for there to be a mother's room, for instance, or a creche at some of these large conferences so that, that you know, that's going to attract women because they know their kids are safe, they can take them with them, they're in a safe space, and if they're feeding their children, they've got a safe place to do that as well. So I think they're the sorts of things that we need to start to think about. And you know that having a creche also helps men who are parenting as well, because you know furthering the women's cause in security is really the only way we get to do that is if we are standing shoulder to shoulder with our male allies. So because I think it's a story for men and women together.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And some good ideas there. I really love the idea of having like a mother's room where we, or, you know, just parents' room where we can have kids coming up and attending the conference and seeing what mom and dad do a little bit. That could work really well. And in your opinion, when we are talking about underrepresentation of, you know, women in this space, what do you think the problem is?
One of the issues that we hear over and over again is lack of female role models. We need to be showcasing women more. Now, Corinium does a great job at its conferences, making sure there are women speakers and women panelists or moderators and stuff. So I think that's great, but we need to lift our game and make sure that's happening across the board, that we do try and get to an equality, you know, space. Because women need to see other women in those roles. Otherwise, they don't feel comfortable. I had a young woman say to me, she was actually at university, and she said to me she arrived at her first cybersecurity lecture to find there was only her and one other young woman, and the rest were all young, testosterone-driven, hoodie-wearing, perhaps not bathing often enough young men. And she said for her it wasn't really a problem, because she came from a family of six brothers. So she had six brothers and herself. But the other woman only lasted a semester because she came from a family of five girls. So for her, it was just some of the banter and commentary and behaviour was just too much for her. So that's one of the other things we need to consider as well is that it's about making it seem like a safe place for women to actually be. And we need it to be very much, as I say, we need to make sure that there are other, you know, start to employ women and you'll find others will want to be employed by the company as well. So and always showcase women's achievements, regardless of where they are on their career trajectory, whether they're just starting out or at the end of their career or anywhere in between. You know, it's great to hear those stories about people's journeys.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. And that leads to my next question, which is, you know, what are your suggestions and recommendations for women who are interested in exploring opportunities in the cybersecurity field if they don't have a role model? You know, what would you recommend them to think about?
One of the things to do, if you're really interested in this, one of the things I think about that I would have changed in my own journey was to have a mentor earlier on. So find yourself a mentor, somebody who you can talk to, shoot ideas with, be a sounding board for you, That's and also obviously impart their wisdom as well. That would be sensational, you know. And so I think that's something that women should do. And don't be afraid to ask somebody to be your mentor, because what's the very worst thing they could do? The very worst thing they could do is say no. And as my grandmother used to always say to me, if you don't ask, you don't get. So, you know, see, and your mentor might not be another woman. It might be a man that you have great deal of respect for, where they are on the, you know, corporate ladder or indeed in government or wherever they might be. And that's okay. It doesn't have to be another woman, but you might feel more comfortable with a woman. You know, I've mentored, I don't know how many, in the tens, probably 25 or 30 women over the years, and it's just wonderful to see somebody coming out of their shell once they're having those discussions. So and getting a little bit of world experience from somebody else who's lived and breathed it. So never be frightened to ask for a mentor.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Joe. And there are a lot of communities here in Australia, like the Australian Women in Security Network. It's a very good community for women to be part of. And I know that you also, you were responsible for the She Lead Tech, was it in Singapore?
Well, I actually rolled out the She Leads Tech program, which was part of ISACA's One in Tech Foundation, in 17 countries around the world myself. It's now actually in 180 countries. So mm-hmm. She Leads Tech was born from me. I was sitting on the ISACA International Board of Directors, and I'd been saying for a long time that we weren't doing enough for our female members and our female constituency, and I thought we needed to be doing more. And so at the beginning of 2015 board year, I was given three words: the Women's Initiative. That's all I had. Right? So I worked with an amazing woman on the staff side of ISACA, because obviously I was a volunteer, and we developed She Leads Tech. And so She Leads Tech is designed to empower, to elevate the position of women, and to engage with our allies as well, and to deal with the underrepresentation of women in the tech workforces and security more particularly. And yes, you were right, one of the very first events we had was in Singapore. So it was, Las Vegas was the very first, and I think Singapore was about the second event that we had. So, and that was really exciting.
Yes, yes. I heard you mention that a few times, and it's very interesting. So congratulations again on that.
Thank you.
And would you have any advices for women who are already in a cybersecurity position but are struggling to advance their careers?
That's a really interesting point too, Michelle. This is not uncommon that women start to feel stuck at a particular point in their career. So one of the things to do is have a look at the credentials that you hold. Might be that you need to go out there and get a cyber-specific credential like a CISP or a CISM or a CISA or one of those credentials that are out there. Or in fact, if you're a member of the Australian Computer Society, there's their certified professional certified professional cybersecurity credential as well. So there are quite a lot out there that you could do. That sometimes might just bump you over the line a little bit. It also sometimes, if you're feeling stuck, it might be that it's time to move organisations. And that's not an easy thing to always do, but sometimes that's the way that we get a promotion, is to move elsewhere. And it's sad but true, people get used to us in our current organisation, so they don't necessarily see what others would see in us. So yes, I'd be thinking about perhaps another a move, or I'd be talking to my mentor or a coach to coach me through that. That's the other thing as well. So there are lots of ways that you can deal with it, but certainly look a little bit inward and then look outward as to what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't be afraid of pursuing your own dreams and your goals if that's what you want, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because you know what happens. Women tend to look at a job ad and they'll go, oh, I can only do about 80% of that. Better not go for it. Where our male colleagues will look at it and go, I can do 25% of that. I'm having a crack. We need to just have a little bit more confidence in ourselves. And you're absolutely right. We need to believe in our own ability and have a crack at it. Because, again, what's the worst thing they can say is no.
There you go. Absolutely. Don't be afraid of, you know, having a no. You can try 10,000 times until you get a yes.
Correct. I mean, Abraham Lincoln, I think it was something like he went for the presidency of the United States 7 times before he actually cracked it. So, you know, there you go.
There you go, for sure. Now, before we started recording, you mentioned that one of the biggest challenges that CIOs and CISOs face is reporting risks to the board. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. Why is that a challenge for them?
The interesting thing is things have sort of changed a little bit with the current landscape in Australia with the recent breaches. Boards are now wanting to hear more, but it's about keeping that discussion going beyond the current issues that we're seeing. So it is about making sure that perhaps you need to look at how the CISO can report to the Board Audit and Risk Committee, for instance. That's one way to the board, right? Because there's at least going to be some common members on that committee and the board, because cybersecurity is a risk which can become material in a heartbeat to an organisation. So given that, there really should be that awareness. Sometimes it's difficult getting a voice because, you know, it's one of those things, if you don't have incidents, there's sort of that, oh, why are we spending all this money on cyber? Well, that's the reason you're spending all this money on cyber, is to ensure that you don't have incidents. And so it's about making sure you get that traction. It might be that you have to talk to somebody, you know, a fellow executive, or if you're not in the executive position, you might need to talk to a sponsoring executive to get that kind of discussion happening at the board level. I'm sure at the moment it will be a lot easier than it has been in the past. I know I've spoken to a number of boards in recent times, and there is still in some boards a lack of understanding of what cyber actually is and what it means. There are all these, they know it's a risk. They don't know what kind of a risk that is. They also certainly don't understand what it means to protect an organisation, and certainly... There are problems with some of the catch cries. You know, the latest one is, oh, why don't we have some war games, or why don't we do? Well, hang on. How is the cyber hygiene in your organisation? Let's have a look at that first. This is with my consulting hat on. So it's like, let's go to basics and get the basics right first, and then go into those kind of more upmarket, if you like, approaches to testing your cybersecurity. So, yeah, it's an interesting discussion, but it's something that has to be continual, and it should be reported on a regular basis to audit and risk, and therefore the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a note on what you just said about, you know, going to the basics. A lot of times, most of the cyber incidents happen because of, you know, not having the right approach to your cyber hygiene. So, yeah, spot on. Now, one of the things I always hear when I'm speaking to cybersecurity leaders around reporting risks to the board is around the communication. And I'm keen to have your thoughts on what would you recommend when they are communicating to the board and trying to get buy-in for their investments or their projects. What are the things they have to, you know, it's absolutely critical they communicate. What are the things they should avoid communicating at all costs? What are your thoughts on that?
I think one of the things is it's about communicating that to do security well, any organisation needs to make sure that they are spending an appropriate amount of money, so appropriate investment in security. That's the first thing. You have to secure an organisation to the best of your ability. So that means however much you can afford needs to be put into it. You know, there's a discussion point. I think it's Gartner who tells us that the average spend on a fairly mature organisation is between 5-7% of total IT budget should be seen as that's the amount that should go to security. If it's a less mature organisation, it can be anywhere from 10-15%, you know, and how long since they last invested in security, that's the other discussion point too. So these are things that need to be brought across to the board, and they need to be done. It needs to be done in the language of business. There's no point talking about, you know, all kinds of, you know, seams and scums, and none of that's actually got, or ZTNA, and you know, don't throw acronyms at the board. Explain things to them in you know, professional business language, because these people are generally business people, not, and certainly depending on the kind of organisation, these will have a core focus, which is not technology. Technology should be seen as an enabler. So therefore, they're not, that's not where their heart necessarily lays. So that's our role then, is to explain it to them in the language that they understand, in a professional manner, and to, if you need to go for an investment in something like ZTNA, well, explain what that is to them and what is the benefit to the organisation. Because they'll have a look and go, oh, gee, that's a lot of money. Well, you need to explain why you need to spend that amount of money and what the benefits to the organisation are. It might be as simple as, you know, I had a discussion with somebody recently at a high level in an organisation who asked me why I thought it was a good idea that this organisation did X. And I said, because, you know, you're actually lessening your attack surface. So that's like the target on your back is getting smaller. So you don't want the bad guys to have a great big attack surface to have a crack at you. You want to make it more difficult for them, because they only have to get it right once. We have to try and get it right all the time. So that was like an eye-opener. And it sort of, you know, there was a comment about, oh, it's kind of like being a superhero helping you do this, isn't it? And, well, if you want to think of it like that, sure. But if that's how, you know, it's about knowing the people that you're talking to. Now, that idea of you know, putting the cape on and going out there and being super cyber person appealed to that person. And so, you know, it's about knowing the people that you're talking to as well. Cyber stalk who your board members are if you're talking to the board or your board audit and risk committee, so you get a bit of an understanding of where they might be coming from too. And don't assume that they don't understand tech. They might not understand security necessarily, particularly the ins and outs, but don't assume that they're not technology savvy. That's the other thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very interesting. You just brought some very interesting points around being very strategic about what you are communicating, bringing this level of strategy and professionalism to the communication.
Correct.
Yes, thank you so much, Joe. It's been a great conversation. I just wanted to wrap up by asking you if you have any key takeaways that, you know, from out of all the topics that we spoke about, all the things we spoke about today, do you have any key takeaways to share with the audience?
I think one of the things is that for my female colleagues is believe in yourself. My personal mantra is dream big and believe. So if you dream big and believe in yourself, believe in your own capabilities and what you are able to achieve. Don't be frightened to ask for assistance or mentoring help or coaching, whatever. Just ask and see what happens. If it doesn't work out, find another person and ask the same question, but don't be deterred. Also ask women who you can see who are in more senior roles, ask them how they got there. Sometimes hearing their story puts a light on for us as well. So that's one side of the discussion. And I think the other thing is to, as a security, chief information security officer or chief security officer, I believe it's our roles to educate. So we are, you know, educating right from the board all the way through the organisation. And we are also communicating. We have to be good communicators. So we need to communicate. So we communicate across the board to ensure that we have a security first approach and that it becomes front of mind for everybody, right from the person at the lowest point on the org chart to the very top and back down.
Yeah, absolutely. Education is key, exactly as you said, from the board all the way until even the end user of your products. They should be aware of cybersecurity. And I love your mantra, dream big and believe. It's perfect. It's a great way to, you know, go through my week today. I'll definitely take that on board.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. We hope you have enjoyed the Business of InfoSec podcast. Be sure to subscribe from whatever you're currently listening. Plus, if you are listening from Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a review. As always, you can find us and engage with us on social media, as well as on the Business of InfoSec website, where you can find this podcast, as well as other topical articles, reports, and videos. So, until next time, take care.